With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space. Yet across an immense ethereal gulf, minds that are dwarf minds, powers that the beasts in the jungle, intellects vast, cool, and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes, slowly and surely drew their plans against it.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, the CJ Mars Radio Network.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Presented by CJMarsRadio.com.
And welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for September 8th, 2015. This is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, and I'm excited to be here. This is episode number 231. You might be asking yourself, 231? This is the first show. Well, yes, you are right. This is the first show. I'm happy to finally have taken off the training wheels and have had my own show after about, 6 years. With another organization, with another show, I finally clipped the wings and am on my own here with my own show, a one-hour show here to entertain you and to educate you, and hopefully this will be the most entertaining and educational 1 hour that you'll hear. And I'm excited to be part of this network, the CJ Mars Radio Network. Chose my home very carefully because you know, I have a lot of friends that are out there in the paranormal radio, and I wanted to make sure that I found a good home, and I'm pretty sure I did, and I'm very happy to be here, and very happy to feel like I did find a nice little home here. And you may know me from another show that I've been on, most recently, I think in July, on Paranormalities and Ponderings with host Frank Lee, who's actually on tonight, on after me, but you'll have to wait a whole little hour. So grab a snack, watch a quick TV show, then sharpen your pencils and grab your notebooks because his show is not to be missed. Been a guest on his show twice, and just getting a feel for this network, I really felt like this was one place that I really wanted to call a home. So if you're not familiar with me, not that I'm not really a big talker about myself, but I think that it's a good thing that I kind of cover who I am so you know what the show is about and why I'm hosting a show on the paranormal news. And you may ask yourself, why a show on the paranormal news? And why is it called the Paranormal News Insider? Well, there's a reason for that, and that's mostly due to my background. Started out in 1996 as a paranormal investigator. Didn't see a ghost, didn't have any kind of experience or anything like that, but just became interested from a couple of vantage points, one being at work. A few colleagues of mine were talking about a local urban legend. I didn't believe any of that. I was taught that crazy things like that did not exist. But I was intrigued how a lot of different people had the same thought process, the same story about this urban legend. So I thought there might be something to it. And at the same time, I was going to school in college, and I was helping people write research papers. Well, one thing led to another, and I ended up doing research in these archaic buildings called libraries. Back in 1996, we didn't have the World Wide Web. We didn't have all this information at a click on your phone or on the computer and instant information. We had to dig through books. And it was that research that led me to writing a small paper that led to other people getting involved. And one thing led to another. And a few months later, I was leading a paranormal investigation group. I had no idea it was going to happen. I was not looking to do it. It just kind of fell into my lap. One thing kind of just led to another. Fate, I don't know. But here I am, almost 20 years later doing this. And it's been a journey. And it's, you know, when people ask me what got you started, I think that's a great question to ask as an interviewer. But for me, what I like to be asked is, what's kept you going? Why are you still doing this? And what have you done to further yourself? What have you done to grow? And that's why I'm doing this show, because of the things that I've seen, the things that I've experienced, the people that I've met, the books that I've read, the experiences that I've had. Year 2000, I joined MUFON as a field investigator trainee. MUFON is Mutual UFO Network, probably the largest organized investigation unit into UFO phenomena. Highly organized. Their field investigator's manual is worth the money. Even if you're not into UFOs or UFO investigation, their methodology opened my eyes to the fact that you can do science, you can do deductive reasoning, you can bring logic, you can bring science into the anomalous arena, into anomalous investigation or paranormal investigation. So that helped me out a lot. I didn't stay with MUFON very long, and I wanted to experience other things, cryptozoology, for example. Couldn't find a local group that wanted to be involved, even though I had a very vast background in backpacking, animal tracking, environmental things. They didn't care. They wanted a close network of friends, and I understood that from operating a ghost group at that time for about 5 years. I got it. I understood that. Ended up hooking up with a group out of British Columbia. And mind you, I live here in Ohio, northeast Ohio. I'm in between Cleveland and Akron, kind of near big area for Sasquatch called the Sasquatch Triangle. I'm a little far north of that, maybe 45 minutes or so. But I do receive a number of cases from this area on Bigfoot. And Ohio is one of the, believe it or not, one of the top five states. And that's obviously behind Washington, Oregon, California, Texas. Ohio is right there. And Oklahoma is close. And obviously Florida with the skunk ape is also very close. So I worked with this group, Sasquatch Research Initiative, out of British Columbia for off and on for a couple of years. And they ended up going defunct. But I did learn a tremendous amount of information from these people, from their methodologies and their research techniques and their interviewing techniques and the way that they took reports. And the report techniques actually made it into a book that I just published last year and republished this year, second edition, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist. And this book was just a project that I really wanted to get published. I wanted to go in a different direction. This is my fifth book. My first four were on ghost investigation methodologies, and I really wanted to finish this one. This is something I started, gosh, probably 5 years ago, and I wanted to finish it. And I was really excited when the Skeptical Inquirer wanted to have my book, a little kind of a preview of that book in their magazine. So I made the Skeptical Inquirer, which is quite a feat for a book about cryptozoology. It's not that easy to do, but that was my goal. My goal was to write a balanced book on how to investigate cryptozoology. And it got the attention of Benjamin Radford, the deputy editor of Skeptical Inquirer, and it made it in the magazine. And it also got the attention of Lauren Coleman, who's probably the premier cryptozoologist in North America. So he wanted to write a preface for my book, a foreword, really, more or less. And that finally came together last fall, and I decided to release a second edition. And that book is now for sale. You can buy it online, obviously, but it's also for sale at the International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland, Maine, which is the only cryptozoology museum. So I'm excited about that. Like I said, it's my fifth book. My first book came out in 2008, and 2008 was a kind of a big year. That's when this show started, the Paranormal News Insider. But before that, I've gotten involved with a lot of other organizations. Paranexus Anomalous Research Association in 2009, early 2009. And this was another attempt for myself to continue to further my education within the field, meet new people, challenge myself on what I thought I knew about the anomalous fields, about the paranormal, and continue to learn, continue to educate myself, continue to, again, learn from other people, get new mentors. And that's where I met some great people, Dr. Doug Kelly, Grant Rubendunst, who both ran a show called Paranexus Universe for quite a while, and I was a guest on that show on a number of occasions, as well as a co-host when I wanted to, and I was invited to be on that show anytime I wanted. And ultimately, a few years later, 2011, unfortunately, we closed down the group as a incorporated organization, a 501c3 tax, you know, all that fun stuff, tax-free or nonprofit organization. But there was a lot of interest still about this organization, and although Doug had moved on to his educational outlets, IMHS and ICHS, which I'll talk about in a second, he didn't want Paranexus to die. It had done so much for the paranormal and as a beacon of light of understanding, and he wanted me to run it. So he asked me last year if I was interested in becoming the executive director. So I became the executive director of Paranexus after 5 years in the organization, being a member of the board of directors, the director of research, all sorts of jobs I had with Paranexus. 2011 is when I decided also to shut down my group, my paranormal group, Ohio Paranormal Investigation Network, that I started back in late 1996. Really officially the name came about in 1997. It was a hard thing to do. I just felt torn. I felt like the group had run full circle and it really wasn't doing what I wanted it to do. So I opted to shut it down. But that was a great thing. It opened up new doors for me. It allowed me to explore my research and not worried about operating a group or helping clients or helping this or educating or teaching and all these things you have to do to run a group. Because I'll tell you what, if you've ever run a group, it almost feels like the group runs you. It's very difficult to do. And I felt like I wasn't accomplishing my goals. I felt like the group was running me. And I wasn't really accomplishing the goals that this group should have done at 15 years. So I opted to move on. And good thing, Paranexus was with me at the time. And Paranexus was one of those organizations that I'm sure a lot of listeners are familiar with this, that there's a lot of organizations that are trying to – I don't want to use the word, but they're trying to bring about – kind of unity in a sense, but Paranexus is trying to raise the standards, raise the educational level, get people to not just run a paranormal group for 6 months, have a radio show, a website, and a bunch of investigations and call it a career and say that I've accomplished something because I've been to some abandoned prison or I've made my own YouTube channel or something like that. Paranexus is about worldwide standards of how we approach case, how we approach clients, our ethical values, touching on the belief systems and things like that. And it did have a certification class, which is another very controversial thing to a lot of people. And in order to get into the organization, I had to take a certification class. Now, I'd been in the paranormal for 12 years, and I kind of felt like I knew a lot, but I was willing to do that, and I was surprised that I did learn a lot from their class. Now, Paranexus Academy, which is what it was called at the time, is no longer around. It's been incorporated into other organizations that Dr. Doug Kelly now operates as an educational outlet, and Paranexus just is more or less just the research unit that's left standing. But Paranexus is you know, again, the beacon, the thing that started me off on my journey through my education. And that's where the doctor part of Brian D. Parsons comes in from. I decided to go into the IMHS, the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, about 2010 when it was just forming. And I thought, you know, it'd be pretty cool to have some little letters after my name, and you know, a little bit of an education wouldn't hurt either, right? But it turns out most of the way through my bachelor's, it turned around. It turned from wanting those letters to really wanting to explore metaphysics. It's not what you think. It's not about astrology or astronomy or fortune telling or tea leaf reading and all this stuff. It's about you. It's about your role in the world. And when I got my bachelor's degree, I continued my education, got my master's the following year, and my PhD in 2013 in the fall. So I was really excited about that. And again, this is learning about myself and continuing to grow as a person, as a human being, as well as in the paranormal fields. And being free of a paranormal group since 2011, I've gone on to create my own methodology of client-based investigations called the E4 method, which I discussed on my last appearance on Paranormalities and Ponderings with host Frank Lee, which again is on tonight, same channel, on an hour after I'm done. I think that was in July, middle of July, that I talked about the E4 method, and hopefully I'll be on again on that show. But I'm sure I'll mention the E4 method here during the Paranormal News Insider. And the E4 method was something that I really felt dearly about, that I wanted to change something. I wanted to leave a mark. So many people know that what paranormal investigators are doing is silly. It's wrong to some certain extent. But how do we do things right? How do we use science correctly? How do we ignore all those crazy things? So the E4 method was the answer. So, 5 books, all these organizations, E4 method, closing down my group later, here I am. So what about the Paranormal News Insider? What is the Paranormal News Insider, and how did it get its start? Well, back in 2008, I received a random email from a man named Dan Bouts. And Dan wanted to know if I would be a guest on his brand new show called The Grand Dark Conspiracy. Well, I didn't really know much about the show. And usually if I'm invited to be a guest on a show, which I've been a guest on a number of paranormal shows, some of them pretty popular, some of them not so popular, some of them now defunct, not my fault. But I couldn't find any information on Dan's show. And it's, for me, I'm not going to go on a show unless I really feel that I'm going to be able to provide those listeners with something that's worthwhile for them. If it's not worthwhile for the listeners, or if it's not worthwhile for myself as a guest, I'm not going to waste my time. I'm not going to waste their time. But I couldn't find any information on Dan's show. And so he finally told me, well, you are my first guest. Well, I was a little nervous at that. I've never been a first guest on somebody's show. Usually it's an established show. Somebody, you know, that I know or I've met at a paranormal convention or conference will say, hey, you know, do you want to come on my show? Cool. Yeah, I'll be on your show. Or, you know, you email somebody, you know somebody who knew somebody, or you're on a show with them and they return the favor more or less. So this was a little awkward. But I like Danny. He sounded very sincere and very like he had a great idea what he wanted to do. And we did a pre-recorded 2-hour interview, which was fantastic. And really felt like I wanted his show to succeed. So I kind of hung around and chatted with him during the course of his show off and on. And at the time, he was doing a monthly show. So the first show was in April of 2008. Then he did May. His second guest was Lloyd Auerbach, which I'd known Lloyd for a number of years and had talked back and forth with him. And just got a shout out there. There's Frank out there in the chat room. Greetings, Frank. And I wanted to help Dan with his show and get his show rolling. And he had had about three or four guests in a row that were all about ghosts. And I mentioned to him previously that, you know, maybe if you wanted a change of pace, if you didn't have anybody, let me know and I'll happily come on. Well, he invited me back and we'd already been talking about doing a paranormal segment. And he gave me the idea for the Paranormal News Insider. And he said, with your insight, with your background, your unique background, what you've been through, the people that you've worked with, the people that you've networked with, your experiences, your investigations, your cases. And I've investigated cases here in Ohio, where I'm based, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, Florida, Oklahoma, Texas. And these aren't just showing up and walking around some cemetery or abandoned building. These are organized cases that I've assisted other teams with. And since then, I've done numerous other types of investigations and ghost excavations, which is a completely different thing, with a guy named John Sable, which I suppose I could talk about him a little bit too. He's really helped me out with the E4 method. His ghost excavation methodology was really a good, solid piece of the foundation that helped build the whole thing for the E4 method. And again, that experience brought me to a whole new level in this ghost investigation stuff, which you'll find out. I'm kind of skeptical about a lot of these stories that we're going to talk about in the next couple of weeks, couple of months, couple of years, however long this show lasts. It's already been almost 7 years, so it could be a long ride. And the show ran as a monthly segment, I believe, for 2 years, until August 2010. And then he wanted to go monthly, and I was weekly, and I was a little nervous about that. That seemed like a lot of work. I was already doing a blog for each distinct section. And when I do the paranormal news, I do cryptid news, UFO news, and ghost news, and then I do other news. Well, at the time, I was also doing strange earth news, and I was doing blogs for each section, which I had time when I was doing a monthly show, but a weekly show, I couldn't do it. So I kind of consolidated the website, and I was afraid it was going to take away from my work. Now, when a story comes out, you'll see it on social media. You'll see it on Twitter. You'll see it on Facebook, and people plaster it everywhere. And then the speculation begins. Was that a UFO? Is that really a pterodactyl? Is that really a ghost? Is that really Bigfoot? Is Bigfoot really reading a newspaper? What is really going on? And people will speculate back and forth. And they'll take a lot of things at face value. I don't. I do research. I dig into these stories. I find out who these people are. I find out who the groups are. I find out who's really on the ground researching these stories. Is there anybody really researching these stories? Is this not really a kind of case for a paranormal person? Is this something that the police are handling? So on and so forth. So I don't settle for one report or one angle of a story. I'm open to any angle. I don't guess. I'm not just going to I'm not going to just take a wild stab or let my emotions or beliefs dictate these stories. I'm going to dig in. I'm going to go behind the headlines and find the reality of these stories. And then another thing that happens too is weeks, months, days, years later, a lot of these stories will crop up, or people related to these stories crop back up, and people tend to forget the details, because when a story hits the internet, social media, Montauk Monster, or a Bigfoot story, Loch Ness Monster, whatever it is, we remember these stories, and we remember that somebody maybe found something or something almost happened, but we don't remember when these stories are found out to be hoaxes or lies or misinformation or whatever they end up being. Well, that's where I come in. I like to document these stories, and I like to do the research on them. So when they do crop up, anybody who's listening to the Paranormal News Insider will know, hey, I already know about that story. I know what happened. I know the outcome, because the outcome usually gets shadowed by the next big story that hits social media. That's one of my biggest issues with social media. And again, sometimes I will come across as very skeptical, but please bear with me. I'm not being skeptical because I'm skeptical. I'm being skeptical because a lot of these stories need skepticism. It's easy to believe everything in one direction or another, but it's very, very difficult to look right down the middle and let the evidence weigh itself. Which way is it going to fall? If you can gather enough evidence or information to disprove a story, there's no sense in letting your imagination run away with it. But if there's not enough information or strange things outweigh the reality, then we're left with whatever's left over. Now, again, I'm not going to jump to a paranormal, supernatural, or any type of other conclusion on these stories. My goal is to provide as much truth and information and let you decide. Now, I'll give you my interpretation, but I'm not judge and jury. I'm just here to interpret the story through my eyes and give you the truth that how I see it from my unique perspective of being in the paranormal, in the anomalous fields for nearly 20 years, doing research and investigations in UFOs, with cryptids, with ghosts, and pretty much everything in between. Now back to the Paranormal News Insider itself. We went to a weekly show in August of 2010, and that ran on pretty much steady. We jumped a couple of networks over the years, and in 2013, right after Halloween, decided to take a hiatus. And that was when I first started thinking, you know, I don't know how much longer I want to do this. I did 185 episodes to that point, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to do it anymore. And part of me said, you know what, maybe you should take it and do your own show. And I told Dan Bouts about that, who was the host of the show, The Grand Dark Conspiracy, where the show debuted. And again, this was a short pre-recorded segment. This was about 10 minutes on average that I was doing initially weekly and then monthly. So I was just, you know, spending a lot. It doesn't sound like much doing a 10-minute show. But it's a lot of production work. It's a lot of taking the time to record things and go back and edit and then add music and sound effects, which I love the entertainment aspect. I love doing that, but it was a lot of work. And sometimes I felt like that entertainment piece took away from my research and looking into these stories a little bit deeper. So I thought that maybe this would be a pretty good trade-off. But then came the opportunity to go to an AM station, which we did the following year. In May, or I can't remember when August of last year, 2014, we returned to the air on a station out of Marysville, Ohio, an AM station. And that was a blast because I actually got to go down there and go into the studio and be live on the air on a paranormal show for a couple of hours. And that was truly probably one of my favorite memories of being on the air in any fashion. And I've had the fortunate opportunity to be on a radio in a couple of radio stations down in Texas. My best friend is a DJ down there, and he's been all around Texas, and he loves Texas country. He got me into Texas country, and I've been able to meet quite a few people involved in the music industry down there. And being in studio with those guys is awe-inspiring, and it's really cool to see. To see these people for real and in a studio. So that was a lot of fun, a great opportunity to do that. But unfortunately, the radio business is not very fun. And unfortunately, management decided to make a lot of changes, and Dan decided to leave the show in May of this year and has been seeking a new host, a new network to join. And that's kind of when you know, we took a summer break, I guess you could say. And I looked around and I thought, you know, do I want to do this? I'm not sure if I want to go off on my own or wait till he gets another network. What am I going to do? And then I've had a lot of personal things. My dog passed away a couple of weeks ago. We've had her for about 6 years. It was a very painful process. And just some other health things I've had the last couple of weeks. And I wasn't sure, but, you know, it just seemed like something I don't want to give up. You know, I want to continue to do this. This keeps me in the loop of things that are going on. this keeps me involved in all aspects of the paranormal. And having my own show, you know, it may not seem like a big deal. Not that I think I'm a big deal, but when you're just a pre-recorded segment on somebody else's show, you kind of do take the back seat, whether you want to admit it or not. And I did kind of like that being anonymous kind of aspect. But at the same time, it was good to it's good now to have my own show here on this network and have my own little time slot and be on a really cool network with a really awesome producer. I'm not used to having my own producer. Generally used to having people I'm on the show with, co-host or host, produce the show at the same time. So it's kind of cool. And you know, it's much different than running a show that's pre-recorded, because here I am, I'm live. Any mistakes I make, you're going to hear right away, and I have no way of deleting that and going back and making it any different. But that's pretty much it. That's me. That's the background. That's the story behind the Paranormal News Insider, and that's my background. I don't want the show to be about me. It's not about me. It's about these stories. It's about the listeners. It's about those people in the chat room. It's about anyone who tunes in. And there's a little bit more about it that I'll talk about in a second. But first, I want to make sure that I do the legal stuff here and let you know that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York on the CJ Mars Radio Network. And again, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons, your host here on the Paranormal News Insider. And one last thing I didn't really cover yet, which was actually one of the most popular pieces of the Paranormal News Insider, is the conferences and conventions. Now, not to brag or anything, but if you go to paranewsinsider.com, the up at the top there, there's a tab for events at paranewsinsider.com. And I think I've done a pretty darn good job of creating a list of major events here in North America. And the more I've looked around, I've not found anyone else who's done such a thorough listing. And it's been noted by a lot of people out there that produce these shows. And they've emailed me and thanked me for these things and constantly getting updates and new shows. So I do get a lot of people inquiring about paranormal conferences and conventions. Some people like these things. Some people don't. Some people think that they're the worst thing in the world. But for me, I kind of go both ways with that, because yes, a lot of them are a tremendous waste of time. And on the other hand, some of these events, I wouldn't be doing some of the things that I've done, or wouldn't have had a lot of opportunities or met a lot of people that I've met had it not been for these conventions. Just 3 months ago, I was talking to John Ventry, the Pennsylvania MUFON director. He's also on the show Hangar One. Not really a fan of the show, don't really watch it. And I let him know. I just was excited to meet him as being a director of Pennsylvania. I thought that was really exciting to meet him. And come to find out that he's, you know, headlining at the big MUFON conference. People are paying hundreds of dollars to go meet this guy. So these conferences, conventions allow you an opportunity to meet people that you may not get a chance to meet under these circumstances. And you may wonder, well, what's the difference between a conference and a convention? There's usually a little bit of confusion about that. And for me, I like conferences because I'm about the field. I'm about theories. I'm about ideas. I'm about advancement. I'm about the bigger picture. That is a conference. That's sharing ideas. That's people that are showing up and talking about things that are bigger than what they're doing. Ideas, sharing knowledge, sharing input about where we're going in a particular field or their research on a specific thing within their field. Not so much all their pictures and photographs of investigating a case, which there's nothing wrong with that. But these are people that are trying to further a field and further information on something specific. Now, convention is pretty much about the self. More or less. It's about the paracelebs. It's about the check out our investigation kind of presentations. There's nothing wrong with that, because that does bring a lot of good people into our field. It's the same debate you might have about the TV shows. TV shows are good, TV shows are bad. That's true. You can't really say that they're completely bad. You can't really say that they're completely good. There's always a middle ground with everything. There's always good and bad. But conventions do serve their purpose. They do bring people into the field. They do bring attention, sometimes negative, as you'll learn. Sometimes there are scams about these conventions. Some of the big names that run these sometimes take the money and run. But hopefully we don't have that happen too many more times. We've already had that happen this year, last year, and I think the year before. So 3 years in a row, we've had somebody scamming money during these conferences and conventions. And now with a one-hour show, I'll be able to talk about these conventions a little bit more in depth, and be able to fill you in not just where these things are going, where they're going on, where they're happening, or but actually who's involved, and maybe even bring some of these guests on to talk about that. And far too often I have to, you know, if I'm showing up at an event, I try to get on somebody else's show so I can talk about these events. This year I had the and I don't normally talk at too many of these because, again, I choose my audience very carefully, and I'm only going to go to a conference that talks – that's going to have the right kind of speakers, the right kind of mix, the right kind of audience, or if it's for something that is a good cause. This year, for example, I drove about 9 hours to Canada for Mass Mysteria. It was an awesome time. Great time. Got to work with John Sable again, conducting a ghost excavation at a location up there. Nick Redfern was a guest. And that was put on by Robin Bellamy, who's also on the convention and conference circuit. She's a good friend. I consider her a good friend, somebody that I really kind of owe a little bit to me being here, having my own show. Dan Bouts obviously is a guy who gave me a shot, gave me a chance, said, do what you want to do. For 230 episodes, he gave me the opportunity to do what I wanted to do. And who knows? I may still do a pre-recorded segment. Hasn't really been discussed. A lot of people I could thank here, but if I'd thanked a lot of people, I'd probably leave somebody out. A guy I just talked to before the show thanked me, Jim Mallard, who does a show called The Mallard Report. Great guy, really interesting way he approaches his interviews, and I appreciate him for bringing me on the show. Only once, Jim, only once, but that's okay. Great guy and a great format, a great show, and I appreciate people that can alter their formats and do things their own way. Because, you know, you can't just – don't do things the way everyone else is doing it just because that's the way they're doing it. Same old guests, same old way. Think outside the paranormal box. Dr. Kimberly Rackley, she had a short-lived show. Very hard for her to do that. You know, some people just aren't comfortable behind the mic, and she did a hell of a job. A great guest and a great host. She helped me out. I helped her out. This is what we do here in the paranormal fields. We help each other out. It's all about networking. It's all about getting along with people. It's all about sharing knowledge and information and getting that in return. So while that's well and good, but what is this show? This show is the Paranormal News Insider. This isn't the Dr. Brian Parsons Insider. Like I said, it's going to take me a little time to get used to doing this different and new format. Typically, what I do is I'll research these stories and I'll write them out. And then I basically rehearse them, record them, and then edit them for a nice little show. But I don't like to read stuff when I'm live on the air. I think that's tacky, for lack of a better term, but kind of don't have too much of a choice when you're talking about facts and figures and things. I don't want to miss anything, but hopefully I'll adapt a kind of a routine and over the next couple of weeks, and this show will flow and we'll go right into the various topics. And like I said, I'll cover each one distinctly: cryptid news, UFO news, ghost news. Now, that doesn't mean that every week I'll have a story about those types of things, but there may be a week where we don't have that. And now with the expanded time I have, I can really dig into not just the story, but behind the story and the reason why I'm coming to the conclusion I am. And hopefully, you know, I can teach a little lesson or share my knowledge and information about why I came to that conclusion or the information that I got, or even have a guest that has something to do with these particular individual stories I have. And some of these things will be recurrent. Once a month, I do get a report from MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, on the cases, their monthly sighting statistics. And this has been a really, really interesting year for case reports for MUFON. MUFON is, I've mentioned Hangar 1 already. Hangar 1 has really brought a lot of people to MUFON, despite being mentioned a number of times during TV shows such as The X-Files, which is coming back. Very excited about that. A lot of listeners may not even remember The X-Files ever even being on the air, but it was a very influential TV show that opened my mind to a lot of strange and interesting stories over time. But MUFON, yeah, usually middle or end of the month I'll get the reports for the prior month. And I'll share that information with you and kind of disseminate what's going on, where it's going on. But you already know, because any major stories or major reasons for upticks in sightings, we probably would have covered the month before. And there are a couple of big stories that happened a couple of weeks ago that will more than likely influence the reports for next month. And talking about viral reports, this is probably a really good example. So I'll share this one. Probably the biggest UFO story last week turned out to be very explainable, but there was a lot of people on social media losing their minds, literally freaking out about this thing that happened on Wednesday morning, September 2nd, in Florida. There was a rocket launch off of Cape Canaveral, Florida. $7.6 billion in Navy satellite systems that was launched into orbit. Now, this satellite launch was delayed, and it was in the media. It was talked about, but I guess since the space shuttle was shelved a number of years ago, people don't really expect to see anything big in the sky. So these rocket launches are kind of not really expected, and this one happened at a kind of a weird time of morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, when it was still in that area. It was still kind of dark, and when this rocket gained altitude, it reflected the sunlight that was high up in the sky. Now, the sun wasn't rising at the time, but in the upper altitude, it was catching the sunlight, and this just looked really strange. And for some reason, I guess it's normal logic for people to think that when a rocket launches, it goes straight up in the air, because I guess our logic is the quickest distance between two points is a straight line. But when you're talking rocket science, which we all use that as a kind of a joke, when rocket science isn't simple, rocket science is pretty complicated. So when a rocket launches, even the space shuttle, if you've ever watched the space shuttle launch, it will go straight up, obviously, but then it'll turn, it'll angle back, and it'll start to angle in the sky. And it goes with the rotation of the Earth. So the Earth is kind of spinning so that the rocket isn't forcefully going against gravity. It's kind of allowing the Earth to kind of push it to the surface, more or less, like a bubble kind of just is pushed by the air is pushing the bubble up to the surface. So it's kind of what a rocket does when it's going in a kind of in a different angle. It also determines – it's also determined by where the rocket's headed, what part of the atmosphere what the payload is, how heavy it is, and all these – so many factors. Again, this is rocket science. This isn't easy. This isn't that newfangled math style that they're teaching. This is difficult stuff here. So people were kind of taken very quickly when they saw this thing in the sky. And I guess I would have been freaked out too, but I always like to figure out what I'm seeing. But a lot of people just instantly just put this on social media, because that's what we do. We don't think. We just record something, get a picture, plow. Here I am. This is my meal. This is the cat that I have. This is where I'm at on vacation. I'm guilty of it too. I do it all the time. I don't know why, if people really care where I'm on vacation at, or what body of water I'm standing in or next to, or that I'm out in the middle of a lake in a kayak. I don't know if you guys care or not, but I'm sharing it because it's my Facebook page. But that's what we do. We share this information, and sometimes we don't really know what's going on, and it causes other people to speculate. And when speculation happens, that's a slippery slope. Sometimes that could run away really fast. It could snowball and get out of control. And that's kind of what happened last Wednesday, September 2nd, when this story hit the social media early in the morning. And people were asking me, I was getting emails, I was, you know, instant messages, what's going on? What's going on? Is this really, are we being invaded? What's going on? And I'll be honest, I didn't know about the rocket launch. It was, again, I was on summer vacation. I wasn't paying attention. But quick research, I gathered that it was the Atlas V spacecraft that was launched from Cape Canaveral, Florida at the Air Force Station. So I knew what was going on, and I tried to kind of quell all the posts, people freaking out that the end was near. Florida was going to be inundated with aliens and spacecraft, and that was it. We're going to be taken over by lunchtime. So I did my work, and that's what the Paranormal News Insider is about. It's about finding the information as quickly as possible, getting it to you, disseminating that information you can understand what's going on, and you can be more informed. And I'm going to do that work for you. And I'm still here. If you want to, let me know of a story that you found, or something you want me to talk about before the show or after the show or whenever, you can always email me at insider@paranewsinsider.com. I get a lot of, like I said, I get a lot of people emailing me about conferences and conventions, but occasionally I'll get somebody who will have a story that's not in the mainstream. It's not on the regular sources. The big news places, Anomalous, Unexplained Mysteries, there's a number of places that you can get all this information funneled to you. Usually they have opinions about what's going on already. I like to get these things hot off the press and kind of not be given kind of a thought process. I like to kind of gather my thoughts before I really take anybody else's opinions into context, so I'm not kind of fooled or led to believe something that's either, you know, somebody might say, well, this is a hoax. Well, might be, but it might not be. And I don't want to be swayed one way or the other until I can, you know, kind of get my own ducks in a row, get my facts straight and figure out what's going on. But the last couple of weeks, there's been a couple of really strange things in the sky. There was a fireball over Hawaii a week ago Sunday. That story almost got out of control. It got a little crazy there for a while, but people kind of took the facts as facts, but a lot of people were kind of – I was surprised. They were very confrontational when I was trying to inform them of what this thing was. Over Hawaii, there was a huge fireball that was filmed, photographed and filmed by a number of observers and witnesses. Closed-circuit cameras captured this. A very slow-moving fireball, which is very reminiscent of space debris. Man-made objects usually fall really, really slow. And that was the instant speculation, and that ended up being what was discovered by a number of organizations, that this was a former Russian spy satellite known as Cosmos 1315 that fell from the sky and broke up as it entered orbit, and it looked pretty cool. I'm sure you've seen pictures of it. If not, I do have a link on my Facebook page for paranewsinsider.com, which is another way you can keep up with me, facebook.com/paranewsinsider. I'm everywhere. I'm on social media. I have my own website. I'm here whenever. And so you can get a hold of me or let me know if you have any information about any story or any conference, convention, any type of event or anything like that. But this satellite entered orbit back in 1981 and was designated as an electronics intelligence satellite, and the satellite broke apart during reentry, and large fireballs sailed through the sky, deteriorating as they drifted through the sky. And some people were fearful that this might have landed on somebody's car, but really it was out over the ocean, and it more than likely burned away. Again, it's falling slowly, so it's burning a little slower than what a stony meteorite or something of heavier bulk falling at a very steeper angle would have had a lot more momentum coming into the atmosphere. It would be a quicker flash, a little bit more brilliant and bright, possibly green depending upon the mineral or the material makeup, minerals or what kind of metals. But when people initially saw this, people who know about these things or who look out for these things or track these things knew it was pretty much a spy satellite. But that didn't keep people from speculating. And a number of people told me that this was just some sort of cover-up or this was a UFO crash or whatever. And it's confusing to me that people would want a strange and otherworldly type of explanation or think that somebody's covering up something, that there's obvious facts and information that's presented to us. Not everybody's out to fool us. Not everybody's out to confuse us. But then again, yes, not everybody's on the up and up either. But enough agencies that really aren't tied to government funding step forward and release this information. We can't speculate. We have to let the facts fall. And we have to make the right judgment, because the facts will point towards the truth. We have to allow the facts to formulate that. And that's just what I did with these two stories here that were an example. Now, I did mention the MUFON reports. I do have that. And I kind of bring everybody up to speed on the UFO monthly sighting statistics from MUFON. It's very interesting stuff, and I don't want to go another couple of weeks, because I think – it might be next week that I may get the sighting statistics for August already. And how this works is they get a total number of reports and the worldwide reports. But essentially, since MUFON is based in the United States, obviously a majority of the percentage of these sightings come from the United States. And the next is usually Canada and then the United Kingdom. But it's really out of whack. It's really – an overwhelming percentage comes from the United States, but that's not because nobody else is seeing these things. Canada does have its own number of reporting centers, and even the United States has Sioux Falls and New Fork and a couple of other UFO reporting stations. But in my opinion, MUFON itself is the premier scientific investigation outlet. They don't always investigate cases the way they should, the way they intend to. But if you've ever read their field investigator's manual or seen the way that they conduct investigations or the way they're supposed to, it's top notch. So I completely respect that. And the fact that they bind these cases together and show these reports and we're able to go in there and look at these things days after they happen, you don't see that anywhere else. You don't really see that in the ghost field hardly at all. The ghost field is usually just full of speculation. Well, Waverly Hills is haunted. Here's a couple of stories. Here's my EVP and here's my orb pictures. That's proof. Okay. And then you have a few scant groups, the BFRO, Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization in Cryptozoology, but they're typically focused just on Bigfoot. There's a lot of other strange creatures out there, and we're going to talk about a number of those in the next few episodes. Hopefully something will crop up. Somebody will see something. But back to UFOs. January, there was 721 reports. These are worldwide reports. February, 607. March had 684. April had 709. And then in May, something strange happened. There was a huge jump in UFO reports. We went up to 900 reports, and the United States alone had 737. In June, the increase continued with the most UFO reports in a single month in MUFON history, with 1,402 reports. The United States alone had 1,180. Canada had 84. And the United Kingdom had 42. July had some big numbers, increase of over 35% from the last July, with 1,353 reports, with 1,048 coming from the United States, 125 from Canada, and 49 from the United Kingdom. Now, the interesting thing about this is that only the United States had a major jump in sightings. All the other countries were within about 5 to 8%, which is normal. So that tells you that something happened here in the United States, not something worldwide. But what happened? I'll tell you what happened. I already mentioned it. There was a TV show called Hangar One. Hangar One has really talked about MUFON and really given people the links and given people the opportunity to visit MUFON and report something. Now, not saying that it's opening the doors for people to report things that weren't necessarily reported. Summertime usually jumps up in reports because people are outside. They're having their eyes to the sky. The sun's up a little later. We're up a little later. We're outside. It's the temperatures are decent at night. And so we tend to notice things a little bit more than we would in the wintertime, obviously. But why that huge jump? Well, with the TV show, again, there was a lot of attention on MUFON. And I see a question in the chat room. What state? Well, typically, and this may sound a little strange, but when I explain it, you'll understand. The number one state typically is California. California typically leads the United States with case reports. And the reason for that is that California has the most population. And typically New York is second in case reports. And MUFON used to do a per capita report, which I guess a lot of people found confusing. For me, it was really interesting because it really broke it down. California, even though it had the highest number of reports, when you have the highest amount of population, your per capita percentage drops. And when a state such as Arizona is number three or number four, has a much lower population, that increases that per capita percentage greatly. And the number of – they used to do it by number of 100,000 people in a state based on census records. So that would tell you – kind of give you a little bit better indication of what state was having these types of or these types of things happening. But for some reason, they don't do that anymore. But I'm still happy to get these case reports anyway and to be able to convey this information and to kind of sift through the data and look at some of these cases. And it'll be interesting to note Hawaii typically has like hardly any. But we'll see what happens with the September – well, actually that happened in August. So we'll see what happens at the end of this month when that report comes out. And we'll see how the Florida thing – we'll see how that rocket had anything to do with these case reports if Florida jumps up to high elements, because typically Florida is pretty high. When we're looking at this last month, July, California was the number one state with 122 reports. New York was second with 70. Florida had 58. Texas had 57. Pennsylvania had 51. Colorado had 40. Arizona and Ohio had 39 each. Michigan had 34. Illinois had 32. Washington State had 31. And the remaining states had less than 30 reports each. Now, 30 reports doesn't sound like much. That's only one a day, and that could be anywhere in a state. So to me, anything less than 30 to me is pretty insignificant unless you're really willing to dive into a particular story. And if there's also if there's a number of reports in the same area of the same type of thing, that's when MUFON usually will report that, and typically they'll say not a flat, but pretty much more or less that there's an area of interest. And we'll dig in more to these numbers next month when hopefully at the end of this month later, and when I get the email from Jancy Harzan, the executive director of MUFON, who does provide these monthly sighting statistics. If you sign up to MUFON, you can get these delivered to your email as well. I'm not on any kind of special list. I just former member of MUFON, and I just keep up to date with what that organization is doing, because again, they're one of the premier organizations out there. And hopefully I'll have a lot more UFO stories. I'll have more paranormal stories, ghost stories, all kinds of information coming to you next week. And every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern here on the Paranormal News Insider. And again, if you want to get a hold of me outside of the show, you can email me at insider@paranewsinsider.com or find me on Facebook, Twitter, wherever. I'm out there, not just my Paranormal News Insider sites, but Dr. Brian D. Parsons or my personal Facebook page, anywhere out there. Feel free to get a hold of me. Let me know if there's something I missed, something I didn't talk about, something you want to know more about, and I'll get back to it, because I like to do the research. And it's, again, it's going to take a little bit of time for me to kind of balance out between the message board, keeping an eye on that, and keeping an eye on my time, and keeping an eye on what I'm doing. And yes, I've kind of flirted with the idea of a 2-hour show. But for now, I just kind of want to get my bearings, get my feet underneath me, and get ready to continue to do this show and bring you the Paranormal News Insider each and every week. And with that, I think I'm pretty much out of time. And it was a quick hour, and I'm looking forward to next week, and I'm looking forward to in another hour, Frank Lee is going to be on with his show, Paranormalities and Ponderings. So get a snack, sharpen your pencil, and grab a notebook and tune in for his awesome show. And I got to go to bed pretty soon, but I might stay up a little late, have a little midnight snack and listen in as well. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in for this inaugural edition, even though it was episode number 231. I'm excited to turn the page to a new chapter. And again, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, the CJ Mars Radio Network.